What's up, everybody? This is Christian Polanco. Welcome to the Cooligans. We got an exciting episode today. We're going to be joined by Christine Cupo of CBS Sports, Golazo, and Attacking Third. We're going to be talking about Euros, Copa America, the Olympic men's and women's roster, and also the drama at the San Diego Wave. Let's go. Welcome to a brand new episode of The Cooligans. I mentioned last week that Alexis was going to be away this week, and we would have some guest co-hosts, and we have the homie who came through again. Always, whenever Alexis is letting us down, traveling away with his wife, you know what I mean? Christine Cupo will always step in. So, Christine, thank you so much for joining
me. You're so welcome. The price of the brick is going up. I need like Alexis supplemental cash at this point. I need the Guerrero's book.
Guerrero's, it's the new cryptocurrency. Everybody's buying it.
Just Alexis's face on Monopoly money.
Normally, we would do the show in studio, but unfortunately, the Rona is back, everybody. So I got it. It's a little, we all thought it was over. We all, we're all picketing and supporting Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Because my man doesn't believe in this whole thing. But it is real. I tested positive. So we're doing the show remotely. I feel fine, luckily. Everybody's fine. But yeah, that is why we're doing the show from home. And I'm doing the show from home. You're doing the show from Charlie Davies' office studio at CBS. So did Charlie make it his own? Because I see his jersey back there in the frame.
So technically, this is Charlie's room. I'm now squatting. But with the Call It What You Want gang, they tend to pop in here to do their pod now. So he's sharing with, it's a brotherhood of podcasting. So
thank you.
Now he's got me, and sometimes Lisa will pop in here too. So,
so very kind of Charlie to share the space that was originally not his own, but he has definitely, he put his graffiti, although he tagged the place. It is his, clearly.
We've got his boots in here that you can see that actually have his name on them too. I'm an advert for Charlie Davies right now. It's fine. Chuck's a good egg.
So we got a lot to go over today. Obviously, the U.S. men's national team Olympic roster just came out. We'll talk about the women's national team Olympic roster as well, because obviously Christine Cupo is one of the hosts of Attacking Third on CBS Sports Golazo. So we'll get to a lot of WOSO news on top of Euros and Copa America as well. But let's start with the Olympic roster for the men, because now not too many shocks, but really the main one is about Diego Luna, the RSL midfielder, who rejected being an alternate for the Olympic roster. He said, like, no, if you're not gonna have me on the first team, I don't even want to go. I don't even want to be there, which is I don't know. From a business perspective, I don't know how you really get in good graces with U.S. soccer, but that was his decision. Even after he rejected the call-up, he ended up getting 3 assists and 1 goal. So he's basically letting what he does on the pitch speak for itself. But yeah, so let's just start there. That, him getting left off the roster, first reactions to that?
Sometimes, especially with Olympic rosters, tough decisions have to be made because it's a whittled down roster. And more often than not, you're going to go for tried and true, but you're also going to go for versatility. So that way, if you're in a pinch, you can slide somebody around. So sometimes those who can function more multifacetedly will get the nod. I don't think it was in Diego Luna's best interest to decline the invite in general. I think that sometimes they see that maybe you're lacking something that they think you can pick up in international experience, even from a training capacity. It also could have been a test to see if he gelled well with the existing squad. And it doesn't really say much for him in terms of, is he a team player, that he took it that way. Because you need to be able to think of the good of the whole, not just of yourself. Is it wildly disappointing as a player? Yes. Do you always want to be part of an Olympics, of a World Cup? Yes. But I think that it shows humility in how you take bad news and your growth and maturity as a player. And I think that this just doesn't bode well for him.
Yeah. I mean, the way he takes bad news is by getting 3 assists and a goal. So
and that's another... fine. But like, do you have what it takes to have chemistry with your teammate, to not be selfish, to think of everyone else as a unit versus your wants and needs?
It's interesting because he's had like negative. I mean, I don't know if you've come across any he's done a couple of like post-match press conferences and stuff like that, or like training interviews and stuff like that. And they've asked him about this, and he does not speak very high. No, I'm not saying that doesn't speak highly. You can see the contention in when they ask him about playing for the men's national team at the Olympics or at any level. He doesn't. You can hear the like, yeah, I've had a lot of arguments with my partner, and you know, I'm trying to be respectful as possible, but you hear him like he has to get it out through like as he's grinding his teeth, because you can see the frustration and getting. I'm sure he's received lots of bad news, and maybe it's also with like senior call-ups as well, and so it all stands out more because he's playing so well and RSL are doing so well. Chicho Arango, everybody, they got the fastest Colombian people on the in MLS, and they're dominating and they're doing really, really well, obviously, in the Western Conference. So I think the point that you mentioned about the versatility of these players, because the like players like Kevin Paredes, who plays left back, left wing back, he's played on the right wing sometimes for the U.S. men's national team, the senior team. So it's given that the Olympic roster is only 18 players, yes, this is this becomes an issue, because you know somebody gets injured and then you need you don't have that like breadth of options on the bench. You just need to like, hey, if you're on the pitch and you are playing right wing, but you could also play left back, hey, yay, get back there. We'll bring somebody up.
Yeah, as much as it's high stakes with World Cup, you have a little bit more wiggle room in terms of if you wanted to give a player a look and include them on the roster. If they are just like a really solid center back or something to that effect, like you have the room to do it. It's just a matter of like how much risk do you want to take on. But with the Olympics, it's very bare bones. You need to be very strategic in how you select and why you select. And yeah, something like personality or behavior and things like that will be something that will red flag, that'll be like, well, will this mess with team chemistry? Do we want to have this person? Whatever. And unfortunately, like that could have been a trial that they were trying to put him through, and now he's declined, which doesn't do him any favor.
Right. And so the U.S., their first game is against France in at the Olympics. It's interesting, and we'll talk about the women as well, because obviously the expectations are probably much, much higher for the women, given that they've obviously won gold before. But the men, it's hard to exactly judge, because the last time the U.S. Played France in a friendly, I think it was a youth friendly, and I think it was 2-2. It's one of these things where the senior teams don't necessarily represent like what happens at the younger levels of like what the results are going to be. Hear, oh, Argentina's playing in the Olympics, and it's like, well, but that doesn't mean they're going to win. They're not. There's the level. This is where we always sort of talk about that the level around this age, like under, I would say probably under 20, is kind of even, and then something happens in other countries that does not happen in the U.S., where it is just like, we can't, what is like, what happened from like, you know, 19 to 22, maybe it's college. We shouldn't be going to college. I don't know.
No, we're reading too many books. I would argue that it's something that happens before then, because you can kind of see players that are going to be something special much earlier in their development. Like a Pulisic, you could see him. He was playing up by at least 3 years, even when he was in camp. So, there are definitely identifying factors when you're scouting and just reviewing players. But yeah, I think that what we're seeing, maybe that you're pointing out, is like a little bit of a ledge where it's like, oh, okay, maybe this is the feeling that we're creating, and they're not actually growing as much as other countries are in the same respect.
Yeah, I mean, but even the American coaches, when they saw Pulisic, they were like, ah, he'll never make it. He's too small. Look at his little twerp. And then
there were a bunch of proponents for Pulisic. He definitely had eyes on. He didn't go under the radar at all.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but there was that negativity. And that still sort of is with, like, smaller players.
I always think there's going to be a little bit of a chip on the shoulder when you think about just the coaching and the systems that we've had that have been largely tipped in favor of foreigners coming to coach Americans. And whether or not they want to explicitly address it, there's always going to be a little bit of a bias where it's like, you know, you're harder on them, but then the really good players that we managed to cultivate are that much better.
Well, I think one of the players that talent was identified at a very, very, very early age, even earlier than I think I've ever seen, is, did you see those photos with Lamine Yamal with Lionel Messi?
See, I call it the baptism by Messi because... I'm sorry, but, like, it's so, the symbolism of it entirely, of, like, bathing him. I'm like,
right. I'm about to take Mateo to Miami. I'm about to take my 15-month-old son to Miami and say, all right, I know this sounds strange, Lionel Messi, but I'm going to need you. I'm going to put him in a pool of water. I'm going to need you to bathe this kid. Okay. Because I need any blessing.
Daddy needs to retire, babe.
Okay. I can only do this for maybe 12 more years. Okay. You gotta, this is an investment, Lionel.
Real talk. When I initially saw those photos, I thought they had to be AI. The first time I've ever been like, is this deep fake that deep? Like, let me go check this out. It's such a wild storyline. Like,
it's so
there's
incredible.
No world in which I could have possibly anticipated that would come out this year during, like, Copa America and be like, wait a minute, what?
Right, right. And
like,
then
does Messi remember this? How many children have you bathed, Messi? Are we going to see them come up in the academy system?
Is there, it's just like, is this like a service you provide, a business? But because, so if people are not aware,
do Lamine Yamal,
please.
Is it too late?
Okay.
I could be great.
I'm sure there's adult little pools that we can.
I'm here for my Messi baptism.
Okay. You look, the Pope is Argentinian. There's no reason Lionel can't be next in line. So if you are not aware, Lamine Yamal, obviously the winger for Spain, who's doing great at the Euros, was a part of a charity calendar from UNICEF, which also, why is UNICEF doing a charity calendar? I mean, there's other ways to fundraise, I guess. I don't know.
Exploiting the youth, the underprivileged youth, as everyone does. It's capitalism 3.0.
Okay, it's a non-profit, right? But they have to get donations any way they can. Lamine, adorable little baby. Love little pudgy cheeks. The interesting thing
little
is like...
comb over.
The interesting thing is like it's like you can't sort of guess what babies are gonna look like when they become adults. Like Lamine, for whatever the baby Lamine looks like, for some reason he's so chubby and adorable that like his chubby cheeks cover his neck. Like he has no neck, sort of. And then now
babies, unpopular opinion, most babies just look like chubby potatoes. Like it's just they're nondescript shapes and lumps.
And then but now my man has a neck like a swan. He has like a beautiful neck. The neck came out way later. So if anybody's worried about their neck, if there are kids listening, don't worry, the neck shows up at some point.
Your neck will emerge before your 16th birthday, roughly. Good luck.
Okay, just hold on. I know people might mention it. Okay, you might not like how you look in pictures, but bro, this was that was such a wild moment. Anyway, so shout out to Lamine and Messi for being a part of that. Let's get to real quick the women's roster, and this is where I think the expectations, like I said, were I think a little bit higher. I spoke about it with Alexis. I don't know how much it sort of come up on attacking third, but obviously the controversial decision was obviously to bring Corbin Albert. But the interesting and we've sort of, everybody has talked about it ad nauseum. It's not really about whether she should or should not be on the team. It's like, look, we accept the statements that they've made. I'm personally not 100% happy with it, but you know, arguing with who, arguing at the internet is not going to necessarily be productive. At least for me, doesn't make me feel better. But the thing I do enjoy is that they are, it's opening up the women's national team to just literally like being roasted. There's TikToks, there are stories, everybody sort of having a good time, sort of teasing Corbin about her inclusion on the team. But I guess my main question to you is it a distraction at all? Do you think it affects these players in any way? Because the sense I get is that the players, you know, we've seen like Lynn Williams, we've seen Sam Mewis talk about it, and players that are on this team, we've seen their statements. It feels to me that the conversations have been had. They've told her how they feel. They told her what they felt she did wrong. And again, we haven't heard anything from Corbin herself. But again, I am also trying to be conscious of the fact, like, was she 19 or something like that? Like 20?
She's young. I mean, that aside, yeah. Irrespective of her age, I can say with utmost certainty that beyond her liking and like reposting of those really just incendiary and inappropriate posts, is that U.S. Soccer getting involved and intervening, you would not get a statement out of her. The edict would be like, you issue an apology in however you think you see fit, and that'll be the end of it. Because nothing that you can say going forward is going to rectify that, quite frankly. Emma Hayes has made it clear that she intends to uphold the existing culture of openness and inclusivity. And with that, we have to entrust that the conversations that needed to be had and the work that she's been trusted to do, and by her, I mean Corbin, will get done. But also, it's an indoctrination. So with that, it takes time to undo that. Culture changes slowly. We've seen the quickest shift in culture more broadly within the last 5 years, and it's been unprecedented. So with that being said, our U.S. women's national team would effectively represent that mix and also juxtaposition in a lot of cases of views and upbringings. And as long as you are outwardly accepting and kind, and or figure out how to get that done, if you are somebody that has maybe some outlier view, that's kind of a microcosm of our current political and climate in the U.S. So to me, it makes a lot of sense that, like, yeah, of course, you'd end up with like one person or two. But with that being said, you could also figure out a way to work through whatever it is that you think are deeply held beliefs. And that's on her. That aside, like, there are other conservative U.S. women's national team players that just manage to not project their own. You know what I mean? Like, they don't feel overly compelled to be hateful to other people or make comments or be suggestive in any way. And I think that that is culturally accommodating. But right, like, for her to do the work, it's fine. Is Corbin a good player? Yes. Was she chosen for her ability to play on field? Yes. Do I think that she would have been included had she had given a different performance or interacted with her teammates otherwise in the prior friendly? No. I think that that was a trial and conversations were had and things are moved on beyond that. I think we have seen this before with like Hinkle going back, and the difference there was she refused to wear the shirt. She wouldn't represent the rainbow kit. She wanted no part of any of it. And I think that where we see a deviation here is that Corbin was receptive, wore it, whatever. Is the booing affecting her? Yeah. Should it? Yeah. Actions have repercussions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's an interesting sort of dynamic, because I think the main problem is that we're not satisfied with, one, the fact that we haven't heard anything directly from her, and then also the fact that U.S. soccer is sort of playing point when it comes to defending her behavior in some way, and not defending her behavior, but really just like saying like she's doing the work and so on and so forth. Yeah. So there's something that is just, it's just not satisfying, because obviously a lot of communities are hurt by what she, and it's also like, yeah, she hurt like the LGBT community, but also as a straight dude, I'm just like, it also sucks. I'm just like, why is this? Right. Why are you so loud about this? It's sort of like we have had a conservative players that represent the national team, but we all know the game. Everybody's like, I got to go to work. Let me just keep this to myself. Yeah. Like, let's just keep it a buck.
I think that part I do attribute a lot to like youth and just legitimately, to put it bluntly, being an idiot and being like, oh, that's entertaining to me. I think there were multitudes of worry included in that because like not only was like transphobic, anti-LGBTQI plus, but also like the fact that you are somehow finding joy in a teammate or former teammate, potential team, whatever, in Rapinoe's injury is just like,
it's gross.
I was in San Diego
for the final, and when Megan Rapinoe went down and injured in like the third minute of the game, I was literally heartbroken. I was just like, this is the worst, like, you know, because we were all building up to the Ali Krieger Megan Rapinoe final and who was gonna win and all this other stuff, and for it to end, for her career to end in that, there was nothing. I'm a comedian and I'm like not even thinking about making jokes in that moment, because it was like, you know, we've met Megan Rapinoe. We know her, obviously. So, I think we have a different perspective. But still, she's just like a hero to so many, myself
even if
included.
Even if she weren't a hero, you never celebrate someone else's injury.
Of course.
Like, especially when you are a player and you understand how valuable that time is for you as a player. It just is so, it's just distasteful.
Yeah. I want to talk about their actual play on the field.
Yes.
I know what ends up happening is, and I get caught up in this too, because there is a lot of like, it's entertaining. The drama is entertaining. Okay. I watch Love Island, like every red blooded British person. Okay.
I apparently am not red blooded or British. I don't watch reality TV, but everybody's been trying to sell me on Love Island lately. I don't know what it is.
It's just another reality show where hot people are trying to hook up and they say dumb stuff to each other. And it's there's a formula and it works. Okay. So that's what they're doing. The last Olympics were bad. Well, we lost to Sweden, I believe. I forgot who we lost to.
We bronzed. So could have been better. Yeah, it's not like we didn't medal at all, but it was a lackluster performance.
The last Olympics felt a little bit like that older generation was sort of still there, and you could sort of feel like, hey, I think this is it. Obviously, with Rapinoe being there, did Carly Lloyd play on that team as well? I don't remember. I think she was.
I feel like she was, but also that was a weird year because it was COVID Olympic, so it got postponed. Right. Like, there's a myriad of things that just like did not.
So, but it just, especially after winning the World Cup, the expectations were just like, oh, okay, it's going to be this again. And it was not.
I think the expectations have always been very high because the women's program has always been exemplary. So the expectation is always they will rise to the occasion and they will figure it out. I think when we started to see that last Olympic where they were a shadow of themselves and it just didn't seem like they were gelling, they couldn't really get things to work and things are going wrong. It just, I don't know. It was probably one of those like data points that you kind of pin and go, oh, is this bad?
Yeah. Is it like the beginning of the end kind of a thing? Or, you know, all the questions, you know, people are asking those questions during the Women's World Cup of like, has everybody caught up? You know, the other countries, have they caught up? But I was sort of asking that during the Olympics because that's what it kind of felt like. But the U.S. is playing against their first game is against Germany. The second is against Guinea, and then the third is against Australia. So that's a pretty, that's not an easy group by any means. I don't think Sam Kerr, she's not healthy yet. She's not playing. I don't think she is, right?
No, I don't think she's back. I'd have to double check. I feel like no, not yet. Although
it's only been like 8 or 9 months since she got injured.
She'll be back for regular season.
Sure.
I don't know if she's back for the Olympics. I don't think so.
So that game,
somebody
the game
fact
against
check me.
Okay. Producer Andrew, get on it. It's the game against Germany, I think, is going to be very, very telling. It, you know, like always, the U.S. women's national team is always, you know, they have a target on their back. All the other countries are always going to play their best game against them. There's something to this team and just this group of younger players, even more than the World Cup squad. It's significantly younger. There are a few veterans, but it's really now we're going to see where our young players stack up to these other countries' young players and to see if that development has happened. I mean, I love seeing that Rose Lavelle is like in unbelievable form now with Gotham. And then the other thing I asked this, you know, I brought this up to Alexis before, and the one player that I love and adore and I love watching her play, but that I think has underwhelmed for the national team has been Trinity Rodman. There's to me, not enough assists, not enough goals, not enough huge chances created, especially against like these the friendlies that we've had that where we should dominate and, you know, and we're playing at home and whatever. I haven't seen enough of it. Is that a wild take? Because it's I don't know if it's just me. I want more.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit. You're going a little hard on her, more so than she deserves. Trinity, okay. That top line has so much chemistry and they play together with such intensity and joy. So when you look at like Sophia Smith and Mal and everybody kind of firing on all pistons now, Trinity is more than just goals and assists. She's great off the ball. She's a very smart player. She definitely helps in that workup and she knows where she needs to be. I wouldn't change that at all. I feel like they're probably one of the more exciting, younger, brighter spots of our squad.
I agree. And we've seen the goals from Jaden Shaw. We've seen the goals from Mallory Swanson. And I don't know if I'm just crazy. I just feel like that, you know, Trinity should be getting, she should be eating as well. That's all I'm
saying. Like sometimes it's just a matter of being unselfish.
Maybe.
But, she definitely is involved up there. I don't know.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, look, I think you know, not having Mallory Swanson at the World Cup, I think was very, very telling. We sort of saw that we didn't really have that many ideas up front, but so I think it's going to be very different because she's also looking great for the Red Stars.
She's looking
as well.
Amazing for the Red Stars. She's right now top five in the Golden Boot race. She is so sharp. I think we expected there to be more of a runway for her to kind of get back into playing, but she's excellent.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so I don't know if I'm not going to say they deserve, they should be winning gold, but I think they should be in the final. This team should be good enough. I mean, we saw the teams at the World Cup that obviously did very, very well. And obviously Spain, we saw the Emma Hayes after Chelsea won the title, the WSL. And basically they asked her, oh, like, what are you going to do next? And it's like, oh, I'm going to go. I have to figure out how to beat the Spanish somehow. Right. And
yeah.
So
finally
she's having fun with it. But this is, I think the Olympics is where we're really going to, you know, we've seen Emma Hayes already managing in friendlies and stuff like that. But when it matters, when the pressure is on, that's it's, you know, it's just very, very different. You know, as far as the intensity that even that the players bring, that the coaching staff brings. So I'm excited to see what it's going to look like in that first game. And when's the first game?
July
27th, 8th, whatever. It's 28th.
I now have like the summer series and also the Olympics blurring together in my brain.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
so July 28th at 2100 o'clock. I don't know what time that is. Okay.
2100 hours.
I'm American. If it's not written in Fahrenheit, how am I supposed to know? Okay. All right. We got to get to Copa America and Euros. So we'll talk about that right after this. All right. We are in the midst of Copa America and the Euros. Where were we? Semifinals for both. Let's start with Copa America and the fact that Canada just making us, making CONCACAF, making US look like they're in the mud. Okay. Because
Jacob Schaffelberg, remember the name, like as we've always known. What
Schaffelberg was holding his own, bro. Like, you know, these Coleman Bowl dudes, they try to, you know, push the CONCACAF boys around, and it's just like, yeah, they were holding their own. They were throwing, you know, they were diving when necessary. You know, we know the game. We know how it's done out in South America. But Canada defeats Venezuela in penalties and move on, which is, again, literally nobody saw this coming.
the storyline I would have written. I'm going to be honest.
We have to pull up this clip because when Alexis asked me, how do I think Canada is going to do at Copa America? You know what I said? I said, they are not going to win one game. I said they wouldn't win any. They're going to get bounced out immediately. I said, Jesse Marsh, he barely even knows these guys' names. He doesn't know what he's doing out there. And
Remember, even if they all don't show up, but like Barnsley does, like at least the back line is locked down. So like maybe you won't bleed gold. But I mean, all right, Christian.
Yeah. I'll be honest. I was going for clicks, bro. I wanted to upset all of Canada.
You were being a hate nestator. Did you wear fall denim while you did this? Okay. Like the Justin Timberlake Britney outfit, like hat, vest, pants, all denim?
That's what Justin Timberlake should have been wearing in his mugshot. That's what he should have been wearing. Okay. Okay, because this is, you know, it's going to ruin the tour.
My
world
tour, Christian, my world tour.
But the fact that, and this is the other thing, I mean, and Jesse Marsh has been, you know, chatting, he's been doing interviews with our boy, your co-worker, Jimmy Conrad, who's doing, you know, the coverage for Fox of the Euros and Copa America. But you see the smirk on Jesse's face. It is like, yeah, you wish you were talking to somebody else right now, huh?
Jesse had been very, very outspoken as an analyst and critical of Greg openly when he had done work on just the men's national team. So, yeah, it does feel a little bit like, hey, puff my chest out. Like,
I love it because even when Jesse took the job at CBS and started and was on the podcast on Call It What You Want, Jesse Marsh has probably been in that room that you are in right now.
Am I the manager of Canada now?
You are next. You are next in
next
line,
in line.
But the fact that that Jesse Marsh has essentially, I mean, look, when he took the job, people were like, why is he getting into broadcasting? Doesn't he want to be a coach? And then, you know, some people are like, well, this is a good opportunity. So more people, you're like on top of people's minds. And then when he took the Canada job, even Jimmy and Charlie were like, bro, are you serious? Well, you're going to take that job. And there's part of me that loves the like, oh, you thought it was a bad idea, huh? And it's like my stock is now at another level because the pride that he has in just having success. Look, and as a coach, well, a lot of people have doubted him. But then on top of that, he's also singing "Oh Canada" is what my man learned. He learned the national anthem, which is not something we usually see from foreign head coaches.
People
of countries.
Know "Oh Canada" beyond "Oh Canada." I got.
Okay, I need to go to, you know, Rap Genius and get the lyrics. Okay, I did not know there was more to it, but no, this is a huge win. Obviously, Schaffelberg getting the early goal against Venezuela, and then also the mistake, the goal from Salomon Rondon, obviously unbelievable, and to hit the ball. I think it was like 30, 40 yards or something like that over Crepeau. But there was something, you know, you were talking about the Canada back line, but there's something to even the midfield. There's a confidence. Estacio, who I think plays, does he play in Portugal? I forget where he plays.
I believe so. Or I'm making it up. Either way.
Yeah. But I was just like, yo, these dudes are like, they're no joke, man. Yeah, he plays for Porto.
I feel like we saw these early rumblings of like a new Canada. And there were far more quality than we've seen in the past. And I feel like we've seen this probably over the last very few years where they seem to have made great strides that I don't know what had been going on, especially with the managerial shift, right? Like, obviously, very challenging to teach at the, to coach at the national level because you are kind of, I call it babysitter, right? Because like wherever the players are at club, essentially like that's mom and dad because they're impacting your day-to-day, your training, your everything else that goes into making you and the player that you are. And then you get these scant minutes with, you know, your national team coach and you hope to show out. But like you get such little time to imprint upon players and try to change or cultivate that you always wonder, you know, how do you do? And we know what Jesse Marsh's record had been for club. But, you know, what was it going to be, you know, for first team?
This is why I applaud Canada. I mean, there's been a scrappiness that I think the U.S. didn't show. They're adapting to the difficulty. I mean, we saw even just the amount of fouls, receiving them, doling them out. You know what I mean? Like the
saying sorry.
Not even you can't say sorry. You can no more sorry. All right, that's it. We're done. We're past the sorry stage. All right, and that is where I think Canada is. And not to say that the U.S. didn't play with a lot of like heart or whatever, but there's a scrappiness that I think we're not sort of used to, especially when Canada plays South American teams, because you just assume they're going to be kind of like the outclassed in the quality. Like Canada hasn't scored a bunch of goals, but they haven't given up a lot either. They're not making a ton of mistakes. They're just like, this is what it seems like Jesse Marsh has brought. Like we criticize Greg, but we point out that Greg Berhalter, that all the players love playing for him. They would run through a wall for him. There's like, he's brought the guys closer together. And we don't hear any of that with Jesse Marsh. It just sounds a little bit more like, oh no, he's just like, you a dog, all right, you win. And you're so not you, a dog. I can't mess with you.
The dressing room is just like Lord of the Flies. He's like, no.
Yeah.
Bare knuckle boxing.
Everybody, he's like, yo, give me your best eye show speed bark. And he's like, all right, you good, you win. that's what has been surprising. And even when when Venezuela tied the game, I was just like, oh, this is over for Canada. And they end up winning in penalties. And, you know, I felt also Yangel Herrera, who played for NYCFC, ended up going to Spain. He plays at Girona now. But and weirdly enough, I was watching his penalty and I'm like, dude, I want you to make your penalty, not only because he played for NYCFC, but because I actually bumped into him in Amalfi Coast for my honeymoon. I was at this resort in Amalfi Coast and I'm sitting next to I'm having breakfast and I see Yangel Herrera there. And as soon as I saw Yangel Herrera there, I said, I'm in a place that is way too expensive. I should not be here. If Yangel Herrera is here, if there's a La Liga player here, I have overspent on my honeymoon.
And you're like, excuse me, Mr. Herrera. I'm a fan. And Holland is like, Christian.
Dude, I was, I was emotionally invested in that penalty for many, many reasons. Impressive win for Canada. They end up playing Argentina next. I believe at MetLife. Can't imagine it'll go too well for Canada there, but if they can hold their own, anything can happen. We saw Messi missed his penalty in their game. Again, anything can happen. So we shall
anything
see.
Anything can happen, but I mean, they did beat Canada 2-0 back in June. Right. So
exactly.
I mean, and they also outshot them. I guess that speaks more to like the Canada's defense and goalkeeping than anything, but.
Yeah.
It should be interesting. Also, like Argentina are not new here. It's their fifth straight Copa Femi.
Yeah. They're gonna be fine.
But we love the underdog. So like come on, Canada.
So the other match that was interesting as well was Uruguay and Brazil. There was a red card in this game that was also kind of wild. I forgot the guy's name, but he nearly destroyed Rodrigo's ankle. What was his name that did the challenge? I forgot his name. Nandez.
Conmebol Fight Club Classic. Add it to the lore.
The interesting thing here was, obviously, Vinny Jr. Was out in this game due to yellow card accumulation. But Endrick, who is, I believe, 17, started in his place. He's going to Real Madrid this coming season. I did not know this, and I was watching the entire game, and I did not realize this, but Endrick only took one shot, and he only completed one pass, the pass at kickoff in the first whistle. That's all he did, which is, I've never even heard of that. Never in my life have I heard of a player being that terrible. Or just that ineffective on a match. He received the ball a couple times, and I saw him, you know, lose the ball. He got fouled a bit, and there was, you know, Araujo. He like shoulder checked him or whatever. It was like a big deal. It led to a little bit of a scuffle, but I've never heard of a player playing 90 minutes and only completing one pass. It's unbelievable. I've never heard of
it. Now you're going to make me watch this absolute chaos match back just to see how it went. Because sometimes, like, that's by design, right? You want to limit someone's touches. And I've seen that get through, like, I'd say a full first half where you see, like, a target person that's only had, like, 7 touches all game so far, which is shocking. But it's like, are they unable to get involved, or are they being intentionally stifled?
Right. I mean, how many touches did he have? He had 23 touches. In the game.
Still very, very low.
It's very, very low. But to not complete a pass is crazy. It's Brazil. People are calling you the next Pelé and all this stuff. There's clearly a lot of expectation. And he just had one of the worst games that he's ever had. I mean, Uruguay, I thought, even going into this game, with a better team. And you saw in the game, the Brazil-Colombia game, the last game of the group stage, it ended 0-0. But you saw Brazil playing hard. Because they're like, we got to score here. We do not want to play Uruguay. We do not want to play Uruguay.
Yeah, no.
And you saw the, like, urgency there.
Uruguay have won this competition 15 times. And granted, this is their first time in the semis since winning in 2011. But it's anybody's game. They know how to play.
Yeah. I mean, it led to, I don't know if you saw the comments from Bielsa as well.
Which... I saw them. Subjectively, I love Bielsa. So let me get that out of the way first. Mm-hmm. I think he's right in his sentiment, for sure.
I agree. I felt the same way. And there's something poetic. It's similar to the way Eric Cantona talks about the sport as well, where it's very, you can see the emotion behind it. And, you know, they're not focused on money and the business of it and the glitz and the glamour. And that's what Bielsa's comments kind of echoed.
Yeah, I mean, that too, but I just feel like we've gotten so wrapped up in tactics that you create a lot of teams, not everybody. There are very good managers out there who are capable of creating structure, but then letting their players play freely because they understand the structure that they're playing in. So it gives you a lot more room to be creative and things of that nature. But I feel like with the over-structurization, I guess, of football now, it kills a lot of the creativity of the game because you're so focused on, I'm supposed to do this, I'm supposed to do that, I go run back, I pass ball back, I go forward.
I will say this, and I think Bielsa, his comments make more sense for South America. You know, you see the way the players play, you saw the aggression, you saw some hard fouls, and you see the way Copa America is refereed versus how the Euros are refereed. And you could have a little bit more fun with you can creatively punch a guy in South America, in Copa America, in a way that really the referees won't get that upset. You know what I mean? Like, oh, they'll let some headbutt, Canada, Panama, that nothing got. It wasn't Panama. I forgot what team, but the Canada, a red that probably should have happened or whatever. But it's those. I think it's the, like. I saw, you know, Alexi Lalas respond to that as well. And Alexi responded in the way you think he exactly responded, right? He sort of came at it with the like, oh, he did the, and I'm paraphrasing, but basically like, oh, you know, Bielsa has become a millionaire due to this game. So clearly there's been like something good. You know, it's not, it's the, you know, he's made a lot of money because of the growth of the game. And it's,
isn't that the whole point and the antithesis of Bielsa's comment? I mean, Bielsa, as a manager, he also ingrains himself in the communities that he's part of. So he actually is, he's not a voyeur when he's coaching in these places. He knows the people. He'll say hi. I think that he has a lot of that very like romanticized sentiment, and I understand where it comes from, but it also is like very like character based. And so like not everything is going to come down to money. He's an excellent manager. I love him. If we do like the grand Bielsa hierarchy family tree of players and managers that have sprouted off because of him, it's remarkable. So like there's some magic in that. But I do think that we have over-commodified a lot of things. We've made big business trump a lot of football. It should always be football and football business, not business that runs football. But this is it's 2024, and anything that you can yield a profit from, you're going to drain every last gasp of air from its lung.
Yeah, there's a weird, like, the reason I respect Bielsa a lot is because it reminds me of a lot of like artists and comedians that I know, whether musicians or whatever, like, you know, those hardcore diehard people, like people that are that die for their art and they love it, and but they've made no money. They're just like, this is how it's supposed to be and whatever. And it's just like, so they're just like super authentic and true and righteous about their own art. And that's what Bielsa feels that way, but also managed to make millions of dollars. You know what I mean?
Sometimes it just works out that way. But you know, it's funny because one of the most validating things that any pro player has ever said was actually Thierry Henry when he was asked, what would you be doing if you weren't a pro football player? And he said, I'd be an amateur football player. And like, as an amateur football player who has played since I was four, who genuinely, I love the game, everything about it. It's part of me. It's part of my identity. It's everything to me. I understand having the sentiment of being like, yeah, okay, I can make money from it. And I guess I do. But like, that was never the driving factor. Trust me, I was making way more money in finance. That doesn't negate the fact that football itself has a heart and soul. And there's a lot of us that end up being torchbearers that end up being like ambassadors to the game because we are so excited and love it so much. And like, it gets people interested.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, look, there is clearly a business to, we work in the business of it.
Yeah.
But there's something to, and I guess after meeting so many players and they are, you realize, oh, they are people just like us. They just happen to be very good at this one particular thing. But you see the abuse, not that they take, yes, on their bodies and the what they have to do, but also the amount of games that they're required to play, all these tournaments.
The
and
commitment to everything all the time that people do not realize, nutrition, workout, sleep.
Yeah. TikToks.
Simple things. Simple things. Actually, the old guard would criticize the young guard for the TikToks because you're supposed to have a singular focus, and it's like, okay, grandpa, let's go feed you your 5 p.m. porridge.
You bet. I don't know if you saw Trinity Rodman doing TikToks with fans after a Spirit game. Okay.
I missed that. No, I can only watch so much football and work and sleep, Christian.
You're slipping, Kubo.
I know. I gotta update my TikTok scroll before I go to bed. Just like pass out drooling on myself.
But that's what it sort of requires. I mean, I think because of social media and the connection that fans feel with clubs, with players, that we're only asking more of players than we were 20, 30 years ago. It's not less. I mean, people can't think that that's the case. So it's something. Look, has it. You know, when it comes to all of that part, like, you know, the what we're asking of the players as individuals, but then also tactically what games are looking like, you know, people sort of blame Pep Guardiola for like, because you were so successful at this, now everybody's sort of trying to copy it. And now we have these carbon copies of like Man City, and they can't really replicate it. You're not getting the same beautiful football. You're not seeing players express themselves. Like you heard, you know, Clint Dempsey when the U.S. lost in Copa America, kind of mentioned that as well. It's just like a player like Clint Dempsey come up nowadays, right? With the way the rosters are built and with the skill set that they have, like having a player that is just like, yo, I'm gonna do my thing and I'm gonna cut you up if you even just give me the opportunity.
I mean, like, even the nature of the game has evolved so much, right? So if you think back, like, in a little bit, it's cyclical, because if you go back to like way early days of like Italian football, where it was like, you know, we're just gonna slot this guy and like we'll move left to right and like save the substitutions, and you need to be able to play everywhere, like that multifaceted tool, right? And that was thought of eventually as this like antiquated notion. And now we have the inverted wing back, and we have like, you know what I mean? Like, so it's like
you need a protractor to goddamn figure out these positions.
They change, but it's like, it's almost like they change so much that they revert back in a lot of ways, where it's like, oh, well, you're an attacker, you're a defender, you're everything.
And that's why Italy got bounced out of the Euros, right, Christine?
No, Italy got bounced out of the Euros because there's a lot of other systemic issues. And
because the Dominican sensation, Ruben Vargas, was just like, nah, bro, sorry, Italia, but DR has to be put on the map right now. Okay, that's what happened, right?
Yes, Christian, for you. He said, this is for my boy. I know you're sitting up in New York. I got to give a shout out to the Cooligans, Christian Polanco.
That's right.
That banger's for you.
You love to see it. I want to wrap up. The last thing, last two things. England and Switzerland. Switzerland lose in penalties to England.
I'm so upset. Saka
scores the goal, which is great to see. But then penalties, and all the England players made their penalties, and they had, I believe, five black players take the penalties, including Cole Palmer. If you know. But this was a lot of pressure, especially, we all remember the last Euros and at the final against Italy, where especially Chiellini was like, he just knew people were going to miss. He was like, nah, I don't see. He was just confident that, Donnarumma was going to stop and England players were going to miss. But the vitriol afterwards, and there was just the people, they have a little, everybody in England, I don't know what happened. They have a little racism box at home. And they open it as soon as England are taking penalties, and they're like, hey, okay, now's the time to pull this out. And this is what the saddest part of it. Even during the penalties, because we know what happened before, during the penalties, I'm just like, bro, please make the penalties, because the racismo is gonna be crazy if y'all miss.
Yeah, I mean, it's so bad, because you say like the racismo box gets opened, but also like the domestic violence box gets opened as well, which when you as a nation need to remind people to, like, I don't know, not abuse your partners because your team lost the game, it's kind of wild. So yeah, it's just like the worst possible conflation of events, where I personally would love to see England lose all the time, but I think that Saka specifically deserves the world. And so twofold, right? I love him. I'm a gooner. Three, I never want to see anybody get racially abused because they missed a pen or at all. But like, it's so wild to me that like that needs to be in your thoughts as you're watching a game, which should be enjoyable irrespective of how it plays out. Like, yeah, you'll be disappointed. But for that to be like option box one, where they're like, let's abuse you.
It's surreal, and it's becoming more and more especially a social media problem, where like we're sort of seeing this as well in MLS, when a player fouls Messi kind of hard, and if he happens to be a black player, it's, the comments are absurd. They just go to their they basically just attack this the player on Instagram or on Twitter, and it's just, I mean, we all, same people know that it shouldn't happen, and it should, there's nothing I'm going to say to make people stop that. I can't imagine there was a Cooligans listener that's like, you know what? I was going to be super racist, but Christian and Christine were like, yo, don't do that.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? You're right. That's probably not our audience.
That's kind of a weird champagne problem to have. Like, thank God everyone that listens in to the Cooligans and or the citizens of the People's Republic of Blangola managed
the best
to like
people. Best
fill
people.
be very open and loving and
yes, sane. That's the community we're trying to foster. So Wild overall at the Euros and at Copa America. The last thing, we'll wrap up here. Especially we have a WOSO expert in here. So what we didn't get a chance to talk about this last week because it was very, very new in the news. But the San Diego Wave are very much in the news for a terrible, terrible reason. And it is because of a former employee alleged essentially that it was just a toxic workplace, toxic work environment, very, very poor treatment, lots of emotional abuse. I mean, and it wasn't just one employee. I saw several online, and it started this bigger conversation, and it also feels like it might even be a lawsuit as well. So we also have to be careful with how we discuss this, but we just want to make sure that we do talk about it. And because the main thing here is by name, Jill Ellis was called out as somebody who is, allowing this behavior. I forgot her exact role. She's team president of San Diego Wave. I don't know the exact title, but she's boss lady. She has a lot of say. And so obviously the former U.S. Women's National Team coach went to the San Diego Wave to start that club. They started about, 3 years ago, I believe, 2 or 3 years ago. Yeah, maybe two. I think it was the second season. But this is, and I can, I, what I'll say about my, this is just strictly from me directly. From everything I've heard and consumed of like people talking about Jill Ellis, whether that's Sydney LaRue, who has made comments in the past, whether that is Ali Krieger, who was talking about basically saying like, you don't know where you stand with Jill Ellis. And this is why she left her off of the women's national team roster, essentially from after winning the World Cup in 2015 to almost like 3-4 months prior to the 2019 World Cup. So in general, the amount of evidence that we have about poor treatment from Jill Ellis is definitely more than positive, news about Jill Ellis. So that's sort of what we know. And we've seen comments from, so Sydney LaRue did make a comment about it and essentially supported the first employee that made the allegation. And then Alex Morgan did also made a statement kind of just saying I'll read a little bit of it. She says, I am disappointed to hear about the allegations made by multiple former Wave FC employees today. As players, we have worked hard to build a team that is surrounded by an inclusive, positive, and safe environment. But it's important to me that we are creating that environment for both players and staff throughout the entire organization. And it continues to just, say more sort of optimistic stuff about the future of the program there. But the we obviously can't go too crazy with what we sort of say here, but more than anything is that you see these details and you see the statement from the Wave, and at least for me, there's nothing but disappointment. This is like, the Wave made a statement, just seemed just completely dismissive, which doesn't seem like the right approach. But your thoughts on sort of where this is and maybe what this speaks to, maybe Endo itself still has a long way to go.
Yeah, I think that with the Yates report being still recent and just like a massive blemish on NWSL, you would have hoped that a lot of the behaviors, whether they be physical, emotional, mental, or otherwise, because I think that part of the allegation by the first employee focused specifically on mental health and the impact on long-term mental health for them. And obviously that those are all current allegations that have been made. Now, like what will be done in terms of repairing that or having somebody on staff or what the specificity of that is in terms of what transpired to that employee and others at the Wave that they're alleging is serious, right? You definitely don't want to have any sort of like negative connotation, especially since, the league has presumably dealt with a lot of coercion and things that were just unscrupulous practices that we thought had been put to bed in this new shiny sort of frontier of women's soccer, especially in this country. And the growth of NWSL is so good that you hate to see, especially at any of the clubs, but like at one of the more recent expansion sides, especially in the wake of like some recent managerial decisions, like the dismissal of Casey Stoney.
Yeah, yeah.
So you start to wonder like, well, what is actually going on over there? Alex Morgan's statement, obviously, if she says she's been an advocate, she'll continue to be an advocate. It doesn't negate the fact that there have been other players, yes, in the past that have been isolated from this incident that have been very outspoken about Jill Ellis. And until they investigate or figure out if there is something to investigate over there, I don't think we'll see much shake out of it. But I hope that they do sort of acknowledge a problem if there is one and make the appropriate adjustments. Nobody should have to work in an environment where they don't feel supported and safe.
Yeah, I think this is why I'll say, and I did mention like NWSL, and NWSL has been in the news for similar types of issues, like as workplace issues. But I don't necessarily want to highlight and say like it's an NWSL problem, and because this is a common workplace problem across lots of different types of jobs and in different fields. I think we have this perception because we see these like superstar players and the club and game day, and we just assume that it's probably like a fun place to work. But I think this highlights like what it's like to work in sports in general, right? It is a different type of environment. The work hours are weird. The expectations are weird. The time where you have to like, you're making memes, you're making graphics, everybody, so photographers, videographers, people are editing and at all these odd hours and stuff like that. And then the demands that they put on staff are very, very high. And so I've heard similar stories, not solely from NWSL. It's like it's also been across men's clubs as well. So it's not like unheard of. But this is where I think, and I applaud the bravery of employees making this stuff known. And again, it's all allegations. We're all waiting to figure out what the final sort of decision is going to be. But this is where I credit the bravery of those employees to just essentially say like, we cannot stand for this kind of behavior. I get that the job is flashy and it's cool and everybody wants to work here and blah, 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 but it can't
be. The job is also demanding and hard work and long hours and blurred lines and all of that. So yeah, like I get it. Like the one, it's very hard to differentiate like how and why people decide to, but it seems like these individuals, at least the ones that I've seen that have set up, really have been involved in soccer and genuinely love it. And that part, I genuinely feel horrible for them, because who wants to ever have to walk away from something, a job, an environment, people, a community that they love, based on maybe a few allegedly bad actors?
Of course, of course. All right. Well, we'll see. We'll wait for more news on that, and we'll give people updates if we hear anything. Christine Kupo, thank you so much for joining me. As always, appreciate it. You'll be back on Thursday as well. I don't know if we're going to be in studio. We'll see what these COVID test results say.
You keep testing, Christian. I will ready the laptop and my mic. I'll be back in Charlie's studio again.
You'll be in the studio with a hazmat suit if necessary. But Christine, let people know where they can follow you and where they can watch your show and your work.
Yes, of course. You can follow me on the artist formerly known as Twitter, at C Kupo. A little less active than I've been in the po. At Miss Kupo on IG, and of course on CBS Sports Golazzo Network on P Plus. On Attacking Third and NWSL coverage, occasionally some and other morning footy and other leagues. I cover everything. What do you want
to
do?
I don't sleep.
But yeah, watch the Lotto Network on
P+. Okay, careful, CBS. We were just talking about taking advantage of your employees and doing making them do too much. So that hopefully CBS is treating you right. Everybody, thank you again for tuning in. We'll be back on Thursday. Like I said, Christine will be joining us. Make sure you follow us at Soccer Cooligans on all social channels. Follow Yahoo Sports as well. Shout out to the Yahoo team. And we'll be back on Thursday. Obviously, there'll be a couple more matches in the Euros and Copa America that we will cover. So we have a lot more to discuss. Thank you again for tuning in, everybody. Peace.